Hi everybody, here we are again. I would say today this is a bit of a very special episode because I usually invite people I've met in other circumstances, but this time I actually met Matthijs. Am I saying it right this time?
Saying it
This
really
is
right.
really hard. We're going to talk about this, but the truth is that I'm under other circumstances, I was in a presentation of one of the projects he's involved with, Blackbird. So we're going to talk about that a lot. But the idea here, as we all know, is to get to know the man behind the projects, right? And talking about having something behind, the other time that we were together, our conversation started because, I am someone who really appreciates musicians and music and instruments and studio environments and that and microphones. And therefore, of course, everybody started the conversation, even if it was about technical stuff in languages. We started by talking about his guitars. So I guess it's only fair that we do that. So let's hear the correct way to pronounce his name, where he's from, and why these guitars are here. So good morning, Matthijs. Thank you so much for being here. Such a pleasure to see you again.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. I am. So the correct way to pronounce my name is Matthijs Sonnemans. I find that non-native English speakers always get my name right, but native English speakers have a lot of trouble with Matthijs. They tend to add a diphthong to it. So if you catch yourself saying Matthias, that's okay. I accept it, but it's not right. It's so because I'm Dutch. I'm from the Netherlands. I always say that my accent and the Dutch language is as flat as the country is. So that's why we don't do diphthongs at all. So that's why it's Matthijs, not Matthias. That's why you go.
Okay.
Yeah, and I inherited that name from my father, my grandfather, my great grandfather. They are all called Matthijs. So yeah,
Wow. So
that's
you could have
to me
been
pretty
Matthias
special.
the fourth and
Who
all of
knows?
that.
Yeah, no, we have a very, like, I can go so deep into naming culture of the Netherlands. Like, probably every country has different naming culture, but because my fiance is actually American, there's always, you always see the contrast with other cultures, right? And even though American and Dutch culture don't differ that much, the places where it does differ makes it just more interesting and more, makes you realize how fascinating that is. However, your last question, of course, was about the guitars. How did they end up here? I've been a guitarist for a very long time. I think my first guitar lesson was like when I was like probably 8 years old. So that's quite a hefty chunk of my life where I've been playing guitar, been in multiple different bands. At the moment, still looking
Oh.
what my next project will be musically. But yeah, I'll get there. And
So what style is it? Is it more rock and roll like that one guitar would make us think, or is
that
it
one, whatever.
yeah, the
Yeah, so
Kiss
my.
flavor over there?
I would be lying if I wouldn't say that my specialty is metal guitar. Yeah, that's a little bit also what you see in the guitars themselves. So this one's actually very special because it's an eight string. Yeah,
Oh.
probably from the traditional recording you can't see it that well, but yeah, it has eight strings. It's really quite big and heavy. Why do you need eight strings? Well, in certain genres, particular subgenres of metal, that is more appreciated because you can go even lower. So yeah, that's why I play an eight string mainly, actually.
So you don't sing, you're a guitarist and you don't sing.
No,
Or
I
you do the
don't.
chorus every now and then.
There have been some occasions where I have been doing some backing vocals or backing grunts on stage, but I definitely don't consider myself singing. No.
So you're a
No.
really young guy. But
Thank
I'm
you.
just wondering, if, I mean, I know it was not long ago, but what kind of child, I always ask this because I love it. It's like, what kind of child were you? Were you, musically inclined, or all of this only came much later? Did you enjoy technology? Did you like languages? Were you born in one of those multilingual families? Or no, it's probably like me, like my family is only Portuguese and everybody is from, I also inherited my name from my grandmothers, both of them, so both together compose my name. And so, I mean, is it a more traditional approach, or did you have one of those upbringings where you were traveling the world, or a diplomat father, or?
Well, I didn't expect to be reflecting on this morning, but this is actually quite interesting. So
Well,
really
that's the idea that you don't expect.
what came to my mind is that we recently saw some old videos of me when I was really little. I think like it must have been 2, 3 years old. I cannot really estimate my age from just the recording, but I was walking already, so that at least.
Okay.
And I just saw it was my birthday, and everyone was excited, like, look, we got like festivities and balloons and everything. And I was just very calm, and just being like, oh, cake. But like any other child would have been totally crazy, probably. But in that, my fiance said, you can really see my character. I'm very calm person in that sense. And from another video of that, I saw myself speaking a dialect of Dutch, which I didn't realize I actually spoke bef when I was that young. So my father was Limburgian, which is a particular region in the Netherlands where they have a regional dialect, which is very distinct from Dutch. It is not officially formalized as a language because there was never consensus, so that, you know, what's the dialect, what's the language, you always have that discussion. But regular Dutch people do not understand Limburgian. That's the thing. I do understand it because I have heard my dad speaking for all my life. But apparently back then I actually spoke it, which was a new revelation to me. So that really asking about language, that brought me back to that memory in that video that I saw. So that's actually quite fascinating. Fun fact, Limburgian is a tonal language. Yeah, there's actually
Any
tones
few
in it.
examples that you could help
Yeah,
us with?
the most famous example that I heard is that I can talk about a graaf and a graaf, which is a different tone. And one of them means count, as in the count of a castle, and one of them means grave. And the Limburgian can hear the difference. Of course,
But
context
we can't,
matters.
or I can't.
Context matters. Yeah, but it depends. And but apparently it's been proven that someone who speaks that dialect or speaks a tonal language has an easier time learning other tonal languages. So
Sense.
just a
Because so
little
your
fun fact
past
out
is a
there.
bit of a, let's say, obscure one when it comes to
Yeah, it was super obscure. Like it
multilingualism,
definitely
right?
helped me. Yeah. So I would say the rest of my upbringing, not any, it's very traditional, I would say. Just, you know, I always get the statement thrown at me that I've never lived more than half an hour from my parents. But in the Netherlands, that's not really difficult because everything
Same
is really
here,
close
same
by
here.
each other. Yeah.
I
But I've
don't,
never.
and I've lived very far away, but that's also common here, so it's fine.
Exactly. So I've not lived abroad yet. Maybe that will actually happen sometime soon. Who knows? I'm in high school. I had trouble with language. I would say, like, my French and German was really bad, really bad grades. I did take Latin and Greek as well. So in Dutch education, that's possible. I dropped Greek as fast as possible because aoristes, for anyone who knows, you know. But Latin I actually did for 6 years, and I really enjoyed it. I love that. So somewhere, I think Latin really helps you get an understanding of language relatively fundamentally because you're not speaking, you're just dissecting. But still, I thought I was really bad at language. So my focus was really on the technical subjects, right? Math and physics, etc., computer science. So it's also what I ended up studying. And I ended up studying computer science. Also, still, my love of philosophy never went away. So I also studied philosophy as well. But my language came around the corner again because I just for fun started to pick up Spanish, you know, with Duolingo as it goes. And I was like, hey, actually, this is really, really, really fun. So did some courses, also went to Spain and slowly picked up my languages back again. And just love speaking to people. I found out at university that actually, wait, I am a very big extroverted person, so I love speaking to people. And I'm one of those people who thinks that if you speak three words, you speak a language. So
I
I try to
see.
use them all the time. Like immediately I will try to speak your
So
language.
you do the
And that
most
just
of
helps.
out of everything that you know, right? You make the
Yeah,
most.
exactly. I would say that my Spanish is quite good. My German is also good for a Dutch person. And French, I'm actually back in class again. So I'm taking once a week French classes again. So I'm really found language again in my life, even though in high school it really didn't work for me. I do feel like I'm a very linguistic person right now. And of course, certainly my field that I'm in, the industry that we are in, helps with that. Even though I'm never at the actual linguistic side of it. I'm completely at the technology side, but it's funny how it all coincided again. back in
I
there.
know, but I heard you saying that you obviously had a lot of options when you graduated, and then somehow you ended up joining this crew because they were, I suppose, in your eyes, special. So, what's the story with joining Blackbird? And who are these people anyway?
Who are these people? I worked at an LSP first. That was my first job, just as a software developer. So I got to know the language industry, from a very direct side, working the same room as project managers and understood exactly what they were talking about and the pain points, etc. Seeing where most time was spent, and my whole job was trying to teach them, or not, sorry, not teach them, build things
Help
for
them.
them to make their life easier, right? To make the whole process easier. That was the whole point. I basically thought at some point, like, I can't do this for one company, but what if I can do this for the entire industry? That was basically the starting point. And by then I had met Bruno Bitter already, who was the co-founder of Blackbird. So we got to talk and basically said, well, actually it would be very interesting to help each other here. And that's how I joined Blackbird now 2.5 years ago. Like I said, it's basically co-founded by Bruno Bitter, and he's the he used to be he's a serial entrepreneur. He had multiple companies, but he also at some point was the chief operating officer at MemoQube, from which he started the whole North American division. That's just what I know. I wasn't present at that thing at
It's
all, so that's just
history. It's
hearsay.
company history.
It's company history. But that's where he realized that there's a really big connectivity and integration issue in this industry, which I really adhere to as well. Like, yeah, I think this is the biggest problem. I think language industry is 50% language and 50% technology, because how are you gonna all the linguistic things are stored somewhere in a computer. I mean, the very little pen and paperwork happening anymore.
So
So
when you
of course
joined,
it's
where
technology.
were they?
Oh,
Because I've
so
heard from a
yeah.
little birdie. Well, like I have a friend, as you know, who's an evangelist for project for Blackbird, and he said that what we heard from you, because we were in a session where you had when you did your demo, and he said, "Oh, what you heard 2 weeks ago is now almost old news." So there's lots of new developments, and I was like, "Whoa!" So what could have been things like 2.5 years ago when you joined? I mean,
Oh well,
what stage were they?
yeah.
Was there a commercial product
No,
already,
not
or not
yet.
really?
No. So I joined as basically, so at the moment I joined, it was just developers, practically. And I was first initially joining with the idea that, okay, it's very soon we're gonna have customers, and then the customer will need help on using Blackbird. Of course, the whole idea of Blackbird being, for those who haven't heard of it, it's a no-code orchestration tool where you can integrate applications, and for heavily focused on language industry, heavily focused on content, not in a one-to-one way with each other. So we don't do connectors. We hate the word connectors. We allow you to build workflows that really truly go from end to end. So when the content is created, through all the different phases with human interaction, with machine interaction, and how the content is processed, and then back when the content needs to be deployed somewhere, the content needs to be visible to users, or sent somewhere. And then even then after, you can then start gathering data about the content, how's the content performing, and then use that to make new decisions on it. So that is what Blackbird does, no-code orchestration tool. And the idea when I joined was that I would have definitely help the first clients to set up those orchestrations, and finding the best ways to implement the best processes, basically, because I came with actual industry knowledge. Like, the most developers that were working on back then did not have that industry knowledge. So it was, yeah, the starting point is always the same for a software project. That doesn't really matter, but at some point you need that expertise.
For
That's what I
sure.
came in with. The idea back then was that we were very soon to having the first customers, or we would be very quick to have the first customer, but that was not the case. So it took quite a little bit more, because I said, well, this is not really working yet. We need this and this and this and this. So that's also how I became basically the product manager of Blackbird. So I'm responsible for, I often say, 151 products, namely the 150 integrations that we have, and the product Blackbird itself, like how do people experience it, interact with
That's
it,
the one, the
usability.
151, right? So one is the one,
151,
and then 150 is everybody else that gravitates
exactly.
around your.
Exactly. So right now we've grown. So the first real commercial endeavors were a couple months later, really. We started going to visiting conferences. Like the actual first conference a month after I joined was at Orcworld San Jose, where it was just literally me and Bruno, me with a backpack, going to people at the conference saying, like, here, look at what we got. And people were like, oh,
Oh, wow.
this is really cool. This is interesting. And it's fun to think back about that time and now seeing where we are now, where our name in the industry is quite recognized. And we have fantastic customers who are building really great orchestrations, and yeah, it's really great to see a product and a company grow like that.
So you guys was somewhat launched the first version, since apparently there's new versions every day almost. Because I suppose that comes also from the feedback that you get from your customers and their needs and all of that. And I suppose that each customer that you have will bring you new challenges and new needs, right? But you had to go from somewhere. So what was the first version like instead of
Yeah,
the
the
151, right?
yeah.
I'm sure
So
there weren't as
the
many.
fun thing there is that we know exactly which are like the problematic tools in the industry, because they're like the
Famous for
API
it.
ability of it is like very difficult because they use honestly archaic architectures. So those two were basically Plunet and MemoQ. It's very hard to connect to those systems. So we basically said those need to be the first. And once we can do that, we know we can do everything else. Or that was at least the thought. Of course, every system has its quirks. And I can tell you a lot about all the systems, but let's not get too technical here what every system's quirks are. That would also not be fair. Everyone can always ask me, send a message on LinkedIn. Let's say that. Back then, we really built the first version really around Plunet and MemoQ, right? So that that was also the first clients that we knew we were going to have. Like they're using Plunet and MemoQ. So let's just make sure that there we can create the orchestration idea. So the first version of Blackbird was really centered around that specifically, and couldn't really do that much else. So the customizability around it beyond Plunet and MemoQ was just things that were standard REST APIs. The first version also had that, so we could really quickly build something with standard REST APIs that were just following, like I said, the standard. And then you really quickly find out that most of them don't follow the standard. So if you have any system that's just based on, just give the endpoint and the shape how it looks like, and we'll do the rest, that just doesn't work. You cannot really orchestrate with that. So that's why our biggest, most impactful feature was actually by our lead developer, who came up with the idea, like, well, let's just deploy code instead, right? So every integration is just some code that we build and customize so that we can create a seamless experience with what the user wants to do and how that technically translates into API endpoints and
But only you
interoperability
have
and
to
conversion.
worry about coding, right? When the
We have to, yeah.
client.
Yeah, we say that a lot. So we even yesterday had a call with a very large LSP who is very used to doing all types of technical tricks, and then having to realize again, like, oh wait, Blackbird takes care of all of that, right? So that's our responsibility. So for example, when you translate a file, for you it's just translate the file. I mean, but that in the back end there's like multiple API calls and polling happening. That's just hidden for you, but in a good way, I think. While we still try to make things as non-opinionated as possible. Like you should be able to build anything with it that a programmer does, that I as a programmer could build, you can build with Blackbird as well. So we're still working on that mission. There's still things to be done. So where back then it was possible to, send a message on Slack, translate a file with DeepL, and then create a project in or an order in Plunet. Right now we're in a place where, like I said, we have 150 apps and we have interoperability for most resources. So if you have, for example, a turn base, then you can just export it from one system and import it into the next one, no problem. Even though under the hood developer knows that would never work, we made it work. And we're right now working on full EXIF interoperability as well, so that even if you export your EXIF from MemoQ, you can still import it into, let's say, Phrase, even though those EXIFs don't talk to each other, we make sure and take care of the
So that's what you
conversion.
do. You make things talk to each other, right?
Yeah.
So how do you recruit your apps, if I can say that? Is it something that they will give you like a permission for? Are you considered partners, or you just create the ability to, connect to them and therefore have them in your pool of possibilities, if
Yeah,
I
so
can
it's
say this?
it, so it's important thing here, you always bring your own connection, right? So it's not like you have Blackbird, therefore you have 150 subscriptions. No, you have those subscriptions separate, and you choose which one to connect to Blackbird. You don't get
So
that.
basically, the client themselves already have to have their
Yeah,
licenses, whatever they
yeah,
need to make these things work. You guys come in and make it orchestrate. Like you say, I love that word, right? It's very musical.
exactly. Well, we don't
So.
we come in, but. We shouldn't have to come in. I mean, I think fundamentally from a product manager perspective, if you have a product that you need to also provide training for, like fundamentally, and I know that some software companies do this where you have to pay for the training to use their product, then you have a bad product,
Yes.
right?
It
So
is a
in
strange
Blackbird, you
concept, I
don't
have
need
to
this.
say.
So we have, of course, extensive documentation, and we have, of course, a team of people who do want to support you if you really want that. But in essence, it's not necessary, fundamentally, of course. We can always do better. But that is the idea of we don't come in. You buy Blackbird, and then you have the ability to connect your systems in a way and create very strong orchestration. And what I see, and it's interesting when I talk to clients, is that they have a process already usually, but the process is often shaped by a lack of interoperability, a lack of
Makes sense.
automation orchestration. So I had a client that was saying, well, I want to download my files from Google Drive and then put them into XCM, for example. That's what they said. And I said, okay, well, we can do that. And we were working on that. And I was like, okay, why are they in Google Drive in the first place? I said, yeah, because that's where people put them from Jira, we put them in Google Drive, and then we can download them. I'm like, why don't you just take them immediately from Jira? Right? Oh, right. So people are not enough thinking about the full workflow, because that was not how we used to do things in the industry with connectors, because you connect to something and you just grab the thing that your TMS is able to connect to.
And also
But with,
historically, the workflows were a certain way, and then people, instead of considering them just legacy and putting it there, it's just that they are trying to somehow keep parts of what it used to work, and sometimes it's just making things difficult.
it's
And of
scary.
course, you guys come with fresh eyes
I
and can
mean,
immediately.
I often think about the quote in The Matrix, like, truly free your mind. Like, you're constrained by the
But it's
workflows
hard.
and the
It's very
technology
hard.
that you had, but now think of your ideal workflow and go build that. And that's hard for people to
Very
do.
hard.
It's very hard.
I mean, of course, also because you have an overview of what has been possible in the evolution of your services. Therefore, you have a much more open-minded, but imagine someone, the business as usual, and now you could have done it in a more, efficient way, but you just are so used to that mentality that it's hard.
And that's the trickiest part. Like, people are then like often saying, but I don't know what's possible. And I say, well, everything is possible. It's programming here. Of course, it's magic like that. And there's only one asterisk. It's the limitations that the API puts on you. So if we cannot do something with the API, then we cannot orchestrate it, but no one else can either. Like, it's just not possible. And okay, but what's then not possible with the API? And that's where really my expertise come in. So I can then tell, okay, yeah, you could do this and this. Like, I want you to give my your ultimate process to begin with. Let's use that as the blank slate, and then see, okay, you want to do this with this TMS, but actually this TMS does not allow you to do that. So therefore, we'll have to come up with something else.
Yeah, that sounds like a good way of looking at it. It's like, tell me what you want, and then take from there what you
Tell me
know
your
it's
ideal
possible and
scenario.
possible.
And sometimes
I like it.
people come with things that are fundamentally difficult. So something we get a lot is like, I want this term, this TM. I want to take the TM and put it into another TMS. And we'll then say, like, so little asterisk there is most TMSs are very protective of their TMs, so that you don't
I
allow,
know.
they don't allow you to import and export them as easily as term bases, although some are just really free with it, and that's nice. So you can just, because the whole idea is that the TM is your property, right? That's what the whole industry has been telling you. Secret, it's not. Like, It doesn't work like that because,
Sometimes it's not as necessary, especially these days, as you think it is. That's what, well, I'm starting to get to that
exactly that
too,
too.
right?
I am
It's
very skeptical at the end, but then.
necessary as you think it is, and sometimes it actually is hurting your projects, I believe,
I
in
think
many
so.
circumstances.
Yep. I think so. I mean, and the real kicker is that even if you were able to export a TM from one TMS and then put it in the another, your matches is going to go way down. And why is
Of course.
that? Because both TMSs segment in a different way. So when you have a TM, you're actually in reality completely bound to that TMS. And that's super important for people to know. It's not like, oh, I'm building this resource and I can then always use it. No, you cannot. That's not really how it works. Like you're
But
really,
I
it's
think we
just a
have to think
TMS.
about how desirable would it be anyway to keep this information,
Yes,
because
yes. And that's why I'm also talking to clients and they are basically still have a TMS and the only reason they have it is because of their TM. And then I just tell them like, okay, but because all the other things are just outsourced, right? Like they use vendors and the only and the integration is done with Blackbird. So the only reason they still use that and have that key aspect, the TMS inside their system is because of the TM. So then I say, well, then it's just a sum for you, right? It's a calculation. How much do I pay for the TMS and how much value do I get from the TM? Then it's basically, if that is sufficiently large, of course, also considering the overhead, then keep it. Otherwise, draw your own conclusions.
Exactly. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
It's maybe not as necessary and beneficial as it might seem,
Exactly.
or it used to look that way under certain circumstances, like you
Yeah.
say, when everything was very static, right? And you work within this system and nothing had to connect, and it was already, huge when you had the possibility of having those. But right now, with other possibilities and ways of thinking also.
I think for enterprise customers, the TMS value has gone way down. It's to me, it's oversold. Like if I would be in charge of enterprise localization, I would think three times before I would put a TMS in my system. Because if I'm using vendors, like again, if you're doing it all yourself, different story. But if I'm just only using vendors, all they're gonna do is just take out the thing. They're not actually gonna translate inside your system. Maybe they do. There are cases where that actually happens, but they're going to just take it out, and we help a lot of LSPs with that. Like I'm going to take it from this TMS and put it in my own TMS, and then have my TM there. So, what is really this TMS into your workflow in your tool
See, so
chain
there's a
contributing?
conversation to be had about TMs and TMSs that I don't think is being talked about right now.
I mean, it's always funny to me that Yuhyun Hummel, who invented literally the TM and the TMS, he regrets it and he thinks
Wow.
it's an archaic system. He's doing all other things right now. So I think that's also telling.
But it was, I understand that it was a really important stepping stone, right? But there you go again. People are a bit attached to how
Yep,
things
exactly.
used to be. Oh, but I know. I mean, I don't know, but you told me that there are other things boiling in your mind when it comes to the future of the industry and Matai's in the industry. So let's hear about that. I don't know if they have anything to do with Blackbird directly. Of course, they do have to do with Blackbird conceptually, because
If
this
it's
is where
technology,
your thinking
yeah.
tank, right? Obviously. But so what's the story? What plans are these? What can we expect from the guitarist
From
from
this location right here. Let's go back to the fact that I used to work at an LSP, so I saw firsthand what was actually happening. And I started to figure out how the industry looked like zoomed out, right? Fundamentally. And I basically just started to notice and a little bit track as well, like what does a project manager do all day? And of course, this probably does not apply to every company. That would be,
Let's hear what you have to say, because I was a project manager in two completely
Let's
different scenarios.
let's see let's validate my theory here. So I think, first of all, what is the fun part about being a project manager? Like, what's the awesome part? And I think that's just really talking to people about,
Absolutely.
we got this amazing project and we need this in this language because they're the expert on this, and I know they're the expert on that, and they'll do a good job because I know them very well. And at some point they'll call me and they have some questions about, hey, what does the client really want? And let's just, get the linguistic thing completely right. That's, I think, the awesome part of being a project manager. The not so awesome part is the actual overhead of all the systems that you have to do data entry in, which I think computers can do better. But what I saw is that for most of the time spent in the actual office, people were just they got new projects that they needed to assign to people, and they needed to figure out, okay, who to assign to. Most important thing is who has time, who can do this in this short time amount or long amount of time, or who's the best suited for this. And they started to email people and to call people, like, hey, this is a rush order, do you have time? And we had the system where we would, send emails to a whole batch of translators, and whoever picked it, they would get it first. I mean, this is all very recognizable properly to everyone in the industry. And I thought, okay, it's just interesting because the system we used had the whole availability thing implemented. Why is that not used? Well, it's not used because most translators are freelancers and they have different clients, right? They have multiple clients, right? Like,
Absolutely.
I work with multiple LSPs and some direct clients. That's how linguists work and how they should work. If every LSP used the system for availability, almost every LSP has a sort of portal for that. And I'm a translator and I have, let's say, 20 LSPs or maybe 10. I don't know the exact number. I have done some research, but then I certainly have to maintain my availability for all 10 different portals. And the moment I get a job, in theory, I need to update all 10 different portals to say I'm not available anymore. Nobody does that. Nobody does that. And that's
Absolutely.
why people are still emailing each other and calling each other. Do you actually have time? Fundamentally, it's because all software right now, all translation project management software, all translation business management software, all general productivity tools, all general product management software, they all make one fatal flaw in their assumption. And the assumption is everybody works for the same company. And that's not true. But because that assumption is made, we're creating a very inefficient process, right? So basically, now this is where I come in. And I say, well, what if we have a productivity tool, a project management tool, however, that does not make that assumption and says instead of just one team, one tool, we actually have the thing that made the internet what the internet really is good at, a network. So I have one place where I keep track of my tasks, the things that I need to do for all the clients that I have and all the clients that I'm connected to, all the
So it's a
LSPs, et
project
cetera.
management software
Network.
for or network for freelancers.
For freelancers, but also LSPs, of course. So it's because they actually get the real benefit. So it's basically a network of people giving each other tasks, working on projects, and at the same time, therefore, also immediately seeing people's availability as so far that the freelancer wants to share any of that information. So I'm basically working on a system that makes that whole aspect, the human aspect, the interaction, the project management aspect, for the entire industry better, I think. And of course, this works really well in translation industry. I think there's more places in the world where companies work with each other on projects rather than only alone. So, in short, that's where I came from. This is my inspiration, and I'm now turning this into an actual product as well. Basically, where people just have their own account. Something actually I figured out when talking to a lot of translators. I went to translator conferences. I did a lot of research here. And something that was very interesting to me is they said, well, in this relationship of me and an LSP, and the LSP has this portal, and I am supposed to, input data, and we have invoices and we have availability. I don't own it, right? I don't own the technology. They own it. If they make a change to it, they can just say, yeah, this is the truth now. And I cannot discuss any of that.
It's
And they really
one-sided
fear that. And that's
completely.
one reason for them to really be hesitant to use these portals. So I literally also want to create more of an equal place where everybody is just as much of an owner of the technology as the other party. So we bring translators and LSPs more on the same level technology-wise, but also therefore ownership-wise, and therefore have a just a really better place to communicate with each other. Because I know about the issues that are there with translators and LSPs, and that relationship has never been super good. So also something I try to hopefully make better in some way.
Sounds amazing because I can only imagine. I mean, I'm an advocate. Of course, I was a project manager and a vendor manager, which means that's what I did all my life was to somehow think about this relationship. I'm with you. So I guess we do worry about the same things, you and I, somehow.
We do.
So it's very interesting, this idea fundamentally that you're saying that both parties would be like players in this one
In,
network,
but because we
as
are, yeah.
opposed to the super fragmented idea that LSPs are on the one side of the realm of business and freelancers are on a totally different level, when more and more, especially these days, these two players or these two types of players are actually businesses in themselves. So
Yeah,
freelancers
exactly.
these days, especially the ones that are going to be able to keep going in this more, like I say, technology conscious world, right? Because I always say that it's not like all of a sudden technology exploded. It's just that the mainstream is more aware. For us in the industry, we were always very aware. We had to deal with it on a regular basis, on a daily basis, but the clients were not as informed, right? People who had direct clients didn't have to deal with certain things. LSPs didn't have to deal with clients knowing the mainstream technologies and what they can do. And these days, this is exactly what it is. So it's only fair that the people who are able to keep, you know, building their careers within the industry actually somehow level up, right? So I like it. I guess it goes into that sense. So I like it. Well, it's great to hear about all the things that you have to do, but I'll just ask this before I go. So how close are you to creating a, let's say,
Yeah,
commercial
this is a
product?
really good question. So I've been working on it for a while. There's definitely already a lot there. I'm starting pilots this year. So this summer, I have some interesting LSPs who I've been who I've befriended over my time already in the industry, who are also interested in this, and I want to try it out, see if it works. That's very, very important to me, of course.
But who
My
do you
goal,
approach, the LSP and the freelancer, like
both.
in separate
That's
entities? Or is it if the LSP adopts it, then the freelancers working for them will adopt it too? Is there a.
also the idea, but I basically talk to both equally because both have valid things to contribute and feedback to make this whole, because it's all about the relationship, right, between the two. So I work with freelancers and I work with LSPs, and I will pilot with it first, and I will my goal is to have a first beta release by the end of this year. Probably, yeah, not open to everyone immediately yet, but invite only. So anyone listening who's interested, let me know. We can work together on making this like a very awesome way to connect to each other. Yeah, and to have basically really serious efficiency gains, even though, you know, that's really the modernist way of looking at capitalism. But I just look at it as in terms of I see a lot of struggle in the relationship, and I see a lot of struggle definitely in the overhead that it creates both for freelancers and for project managers. And we can just make each other's lives a little happier by just doing things more efficient. Yeah.
The other day, one of our friends was actually talking about, he's an expert in interpretation, and I was like thinking about these major issues for text translation, for obviously for translation. Imagine for interpretation, right? So I'm sure you've thought of that, and there's probably a part of it because some people actually do both, and other people only dedicate to one of them, but they have somehow the same problems. But when you talk to about interpretation, then you have extra problems that have to do with availability, right? So it's like the on the spot kind of situation. So if everybody is aware of what is really going on with everybody else as a team, even if they're not part of your company, then it would be the ideal situation.
Yeah,
So I'm
exactly.
sure a lot of people will be contacting you about this. And so Eli,
Hopefully.
to know what's going on and to check what you're doing, because it's always very nice. And I know that your brain must be always boiling. Like you don't have enough work doing your job and you
Yeah,
already
like
have all of these.
my thoughts are always like 3 steps ahead of where I'm actually at physically with like the product, so I should not go too fast in that sense. Like, okay, just make the fundamentals
And
right
then
and
looking for the
pilot it,
band, right? At
and
the
then
same
looking for the
time.
band, that too. Yeah, I still also need to do that. It was also my New Year's resolution, like, okay, need to figure out musically what I'm gonna continue with. Yeah,
Yeah, well,
but things to do.
very nice to get to meet you a little bit better. And it's I think it's very original to have someone who actually original for me, right? The podcast, to have someone who really comes from this full-blown technology background and then gets interested in the industry and decides to, service the industry in such a positive way.
I
So
love
thank you
it.
so much. Yes.
Everybody loves the language industry. Everybody
Do
also doesn't want to leave.
they?
If you're inside, you're inside.
Yes, I guess it's one of those things you don't want to leave unless you're really forced to, right? I guess we're holding on for dear life. Thank you so much, Matthijs. And I'm sure I'll hear and see new things for you from you very soon. And hope everything goes okay. And let me know when you find this band so I can listen to what you guys do.
Great.
And
And thank you for having me.
of
This was
course.
really a pleasure.
Okay, thank you so much, and I'll see you around. Have a great day.